The U.S. government has done some bad things over the years and will almost certainly continue to do them in the years ahead. Foreign policy has very little to do with morality. And as long as any action can be justified by explaining that it was performed in the national interest, that will continue to be the case. And so we give support to repressive governments in South Korea and Brazil and Chile because it is in our national interest to do so. We will supply sophisticated weapons to backward countries and betray an entire people like the Kurds, all because it is in our national interest.
This week in Radical History for the week of July 28th. Inspiration came from the Slingshot Organizer. Some audio is borrowed from the Radio Roots crew at WBAI in New York. And other radical info can be found in the People's Calendar at the Daily Bleed website.
Yo, check this out, man. There is something going on in the ether.
The kids are now moving back into the street.
For every Martin they cut down, there must be 100 Martins to step into his shoes. Hey!
This week in Radical History for July 28th, 1586, debunking once again that the New World was founded on religious freedoms, Puritan Anne Hutchinson would stand trial and forcibly removed from the colony of her home in the New World. Also on July 28, 1868, the 14th Amendment to the Constitution technically gives equal rights to all non-Indian men, but in practice gives most rights to the wealthy and marginalizes everybody else. Also on this date in 1915, President Wilson sent troops back into Haiti where the populace were up in arms against the U.S.-backed dictator. You see today how well Haiti is doing because of all the benevolent nature of the good old U.S. of A. Also on this date in 1932, Hoover forcibly evicts bonus marchers from their encampment. Two killed when current U.S. Army attacks encampment of 20,000 World War I veterans gathered in Washington, D.C. to demand their bonus benefit payments. As the flames destroyed the shantytown, people streamed into Maryland. Behind them, they leave the wounded and little Bernard Mayers, who dies in Washington Hospital from tear gas inhalation. During this month, as Hoover begins traveling the country for his reelection campaign, he's met with unexpected hatred in St. Paul, where he tells his audience, "Thank God we are still in a government that knows how to deal with the mob." Angry murmurs begin to roll up from the crowd in front of him. Shaken, Hoover is forced from the stage. Also on a state in 1940, Gandhi, as he starts his non-cooperative campaign against the British in India, would be quoted as saying, "The exploitation of the poor can be extinguished not by effecting the destruction of a few millionaires, but by removing the ignorance of the poor and teaching them to not cooperate with their exploiters." Lastly, for July 28th, shining a light on more right-wing lies, like when Condoleezza Rice tells us that no one would ever think about planes being used to hit skyscrapers, while in this date in 1945, Army twin-engine B-25 light bomber crashes into the 79th floor of the Empire State Building, setting it afire, killing 13 and injuring 26. Yeah, who could have imagined planes hitting tall buildings in New York? This day in Radical History for July 29th, 1871, Roberto Elia lives. An Italian militant anarchist, Elia and his friends, Andrea Salzdo, owned a print shop in the United States. In 1920, during the Palmer terrorist raids, to rid the country of, quote, Red Satans, unquote, both were abducted without a warrant for arrest, held in secret, interrogated and beaten for 8 weeks. Andrea mysteriously, quote, fell, unquote, from the 14th floor of the Department of Justice offices. On July 29th in 1903, a delegation from the March of the Mill Children accompanied by Mother Jones arrives at President Theodore Roosevelt's summer home in Oyster Bay, Long Island, to publicize the harsh conditions of child labor. They were not allowed through the gates. The March of the Mill Children began in Philadelphia on July 7th to publicize the harsh conditions of child laborers who were forced to work 60-plus hours a week and often missing fingers and hands from the capitalist textile mills. Also on July 29, 1951, Conference of, quote, Africans, Indians, and Coloreds, unquote, agree on a mass campaign to end the oppressive new apartheid laws in South Africa. It would take decades of actions and boycotts to end the apartheid oppression. Also on this date in 1968, riots rock Seattle central area after the police raid on a local Black Panther Party headquarters. Seattle Black Panther Party leader Aaron Dixon is arrested for possession of a stolen typewriter, later acquitted. Over 3 days of rioting, 69 more would be arrested. Also on July 29, 1974, a second article of impeachment, abuse of power, voted 28-10 against Nixon by the House Judiciary Committee, as former Treasury Secretary John Connolly is indicted on charges involving the acceptance of bribes, perjury, conspiracy, and obstruction of justice, the good old American way. Two more items for July 29th, 1987. Senator George Mitchell tells Ed Meese he finds it hard to accept his explanation that he took no notes during the earlier questioning of key Reagan officials. During the 2 days of testimony, Meese utters the phrase, "I do not recall," or some variation therefore, about 340 times. Also on July 29, 2004, 400 clashed with Boston police. The Boston Area Black Tea Party Society, an ad hoc group of self-described anarchist and anti-authoritarian activists, burned a two-faced effigy depicting President Bush on one side and Senator John Kerry on the other side, get into a shoving match with Boston's finest, one of whom complains, "We've trained for 2 years for this, and they showed us nothing. I'm disappointed in the quality of anarchists we got here." Well, come on out to the RNC in Minneapolis coming up. By the time the Republicans come to Minneapolis-St. Paul for the Republican National Presidential Nomination Convention this September, a large group of protesters from around the country will have been organizing for over 2 years to try to shine a light on this process, and through a diversity of tactics, some will try to shut it down. A vast number of organizations are organizing for this one purpose, both against the Republican National Convention and the Democratic National Convention, which will be held in Denver. I caught up with three people from the No RNC organization on their nationwide tour. Well, this is Mike Cannon. I'm with a group, the RNC Welcoming Committee for the Republican National Convention that's going to be coming up later this fall. Do you have a website that we could go to, and we'll mention again at the end of this, where you possibly get more information if you're interested in finding out more about the RNC Welcoming Committee?
Yeah, the website is www.nornc.org.
What exactly is the Welcoming Committee hoping is going to happen when the Republicans come to Minneapolis?
Well, we have two goals that we've been talking about. One is building our capacity as a movement, so it's actually sort of self-focused. We're interested in people coming out of these protests smarter and stronger than when they went into them. The other is to crash the convention. The interest in that is, I guess, making this a convention to remember. There's a lot of public sentiment against the Republicans right now, and we want to channel that in a more radical direction, and we'd love to see people put as much energy as possible into denying delegates access to the Excel Center.
So there's a big call, basically, for a bunch of for people to show up throughout the United States and possibly the world, even to come and voice their opinions against the Republican National Convention. I'm wondering, you know, if someone was interested in coming by that, and maybe they want to plug in, maybe not, is there going to be ways that they can get involved? Is there going to be places that people might be able to go to if they need a place to stay? Will there possibly be food being served? Any of those kind of things in case someone's listening to the show saying, hey, this might be interesting. Maybe I want to check it out.
Well, we're committed to trying to provide the infrastructural framework for people who want to come into town to protest the RNC. This includes trying to set up housing, whether there's a lot of groups that are working to make sure that there's food for everyone. There should be like some bikes for people to ride around. We're hoping to put up like a travel board for ride shares and things like that. So we're really committed to trying to make sure that that sort of like basic logistical support is there for everyone.
Is there anything else you'd like to add about the RNC Welcoming Committee? Again, the Republicans are coming to Minneapolis this fall, and I'm speaking with some members of the RNC Welcoming Committee who are on a tour talking about some of the events that are planned. Is there anything else you want to talk to? And then at the end of that, if you could, again, tell me the website.
To, you know, give everyone a heads up of sort of what we're planning, what the anarchist, anti-authoritarian sort of strategy that came out of our big national pre-NC consulta last summer, last September, was one of blockading and denying delegates access to the Excel Center. So we really encourage people to go to our website, nornc.org, and check out the details on what we're doing with that, but also to recognize that there's all sorts of different ways to plug in, both within the anarchist and anti-authoritarian blockading framework, no matter what your level of risk that you want to take or whatever types of actions you want to do. There's a lot of ways to plug in, and there's a lot of other stuff that's going on in the Twin Cities over those 4 days, so people should definitely keep an eye out and consider coming.
Agreements we've made with other groups we're working with locally actually is a commitment to diversity of tactics. What that basically means is that we recognize we don't have the answers, we don't know the best way to go about this, and the best way is probably the sum of all of our parts doing different things, doing what we feel is most effective or what moves us. That's why we are creating a broad framework for all types of different actions.
Well, thank you for a couple minutes you spent with me today. I appreciate it, and good luck with your tour. That was an interview with people organizing against the Republican National Convention September 1st through the 4th in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minnesota. For more information, go to nornc.org. That's nornc.org. From the Glee Glee Studios, this is Mark Cannon. This week in Radical History for July 30th, 1866, police shoot into assembly of blacks outside the Mechanics Institute in New Orleans, and a crowd of whites then storm the hall. By the time the federal troops restored order, 38 are dead, 136 wounded, most of them are black.
What usually happens when people without guns stand up to people with guns.
Also on July 30th, 1881, Marine General Smedley Butler lives, best remembered for his book War is a Racket. Smedley Butler, who was one of the most conscientious, driven, and controversial men ever to wear the uniform of the United States Marine Corps. Although he rose to the rank of Major General and was two-time winner of the Medal of Honor, Butler is remembered today as his vocal critic to the colonization and American foreign policy. By the time of his retirement in 1931, in bitter recollection of his 33 years of military career, he realized that far from making the world safer for democracy, he had spent his entire adult life fighting dirty little wars all over the Asia and Latin America areas, whose true purpose was to enrich the handful of wealthy industrialists. That was Smedley Butler's War is a Racket. Henry Ford, an American automobile manufacturer, is financing Adolf Hitler's nationalist anti-Semitic movement in Munich. His spacious office headquarters in Munich is splendidly furnished, and his organization employs a host of highly paid lieutenants and officials in Berlin. Ford's own anti-Semite newspaper, the Dearborn Independent, with a circulation over 700,000, first attacked Jews in its May 1920 issue. Many of these were reprinted as The International Jew, The World's Foremost Problem, four volumes, and later published in a variety of languages and disseminated widely throughout the United States and abroad. And on this date in 1974, the U.S. Congress released findings that Ford's involvement with the Nazis are true. Have you driven your Ford Nazi supporter car lately? Also on this date in 1945 in the high seas, USS Indianapolis, having just completed a secret mission to deliver the atomic bomb that would be dropped on Hiroshima, is torpedoed. The ship sinks in 12 minutes. Because of the secret nature of this mission, the incident is not reported for 5 days. Survivors were left to fend for their own before the Navy plane on routine patrol discovered them. Of the 1,100 men aboard, 880 lost their lives in the drowning in sharks and exposures. Add that to your calculations and ethics of dropping a nuke on civilian population centers. Also on this date in 1969, Tricky Dick Nixon calls the Vietnam War one of America's finest hours. Same war, same propaganda, different times. Also on this date in 1970, a series of bombings attributed to England's anarchist Angry Brigade occur over the next 18 months. Also on July 30th, 1972, 53 caribou found dead near an army base that has served as a site for chemical and biological warfare laboratory. The post commander suggests that the animals might have been struck by lightning. I suggest that perhaps they were just suicidal. Lastly on this date in 1996 in England, four plowshare activists acquitted of all charges on the basis of preventing a greater crime after having extensively damaged an F-16 jet fighter that was to be sold to the Indonesia government in the genocidal occupation of East Timor. Guess who makes F-16s? Anyone? Anyone?
Bueller. Bueller. Bueller.
This week in Radical History for July 31st, 1859, U.S. troops land in Shanghai to protect American interests. People, the time's
come. This is your radio reporter, Hannah George. On this day, July 31st in 1936, Pedro Albizu Campos, president of the Puerto Rican Nationalist Party, was charged with trying to overthrow the government and sentenced to 6 to 10 years in prison. Albizu had dedicated his life to the liberation and decolonization of Puerto Rico, and in 1950, he was arrested again and sentenced to a 72-year prison term. While locked up, he claimed that he was subject to dangerous and painful radiation experiments, which the U.S. were conducting illegally in Puerto Rican prisons. The American government consistently denied Albizu's accusation and claimed that he was insane, but his health condition did continue to mysteriously deteriorate until he died in prison 15 years later. Yeah, I said it. This is your free speech educator reminding you, never let the past slip away.
Only a couple more items for July 31st, 1974. John Ehrlichman sentenced to a 20-month to 5-year club-fed prison for his role in the burglary of the offices of Daniel Ellsberg, psychiatrist under Tricky Dick Nixon's reign of terror. Also on that date in 1984, the CIA's Williams Casey and Reagan sweetheart Ollie North arrived seeking Manuel Noriega's aid for the Contras. you know, Noriega, who would be arrested a couple years later for not helping us out enough. Lastly, on a date in 2000, police raid the puppet warehouse before the RNC in Philly. This week in Radical History for August 1st, we only have three items. 1917, IWW organizer Frank Little lynched in Butte, Montana, and his body is left dangling from the railroad trestles. Also on August 1st, 1938, 200 peaceful demonstrating workers were attacked by 70 cops. 51 longshoremen, racially mixed, and union supporters in Hilo, Hawaii are bayoneted and shot in the back by police. Lastly, on his state in 1969, Massachusetts Supreme Court judge rejects the DA request for an inquest into the death of Mary Jo Capaci, killed by Kennedy, who only receives a 2-month suspended sentence. Yep, everyone has equal rights under the law. This week in Radical History for August 2nd, only got a couple items. 1832. Sioux Fox tribes in Wisconsin, under a white flag of truce, massacred at Bad Axe River by Illinois militia. The militia commander records his impression, quote, "As we neared them, they raised a white flag and endeavored to decoy us, but we were a little too old for them. The militia disregarded the surrender attempts and slaughtered nearly the entire group, including women and children." Also in Wisconsin in 1855, Wisconsin Black River Band of the Chippewa signed treaty to compensate Chippewa for destruction of their homes and construction of a 500-lock Great Lakes system. The Chippewa have yet to be paid. Perhaps considered the smartest man ever to live, Albert Einstein on this date in 1931 urges all scientists to refuse military work. Tomorrow items for August 2nd, 1943. 800 inmates revolt at Tripeka concentration camp, raid the SS arsenal, and kill over 20 guards, allowing more than 100 prisoners to escape. Lastly on this date in 1990, after years of Saddam Hussein protesting Kuwaiti slant oil drilling on Iraqi lands, and after U.S. Ambassador April Gillespie tells him that the U.S. would stay out of any Iraq-Kuwait war, Iraq invades Kuwait. United States invades Iraq. And the beat goes on. This week in Radical History for August 3rd, three items. 1906, 12 unidentified black soldiers make a shooting sortie into Brownsville, Texas, killing one citizen. President Teddy Roosevelt, stating that since no one would confess, all would have to suffer, gives dishonorable discharges to every black in Brownsville camp, including three Medal of Honor winners. Also on August 3rd, 1913, four die in what is called the Wetland Riots, when police fire into a crowd of California farm workers trying to organize for better working conditions. Two labor leaders, one not even present at this day, are later convicted for murder and encouraging workers to organize, which, by the legal logic of the time, apparently forced officials to shoot and kill. Conditions on the farms were terrible, with no water in fields, and workers suffered from diphtheria, malaria, and typhoid fever. How dare they try to organize against that? Lastly and sadly, in 1945, two young black women are raped by uniformed police officers in Memphis, Tennessee. This has been This Week in Radical History, produced at the Glee Glee Studios. Inspiration came from the Slingshot organizer. Google the Slingshot Collective for more info. Special thanks to the Radio Roots crew at WBAI in New York, whose great audio I borrowed for the show. And more radical info can be found at the Daily Bleed website. Google the Daily Bleed for more radical information. Comments or suggestions, please consider emailing me at themikecannonshow@hotmail.com. Cannon spelled C-A-N-N-O-N. That's themikecannonshow@hotmail.com. Reminder what anarchist and feminist Emma Goldman said. If voting never really changed anything, they would have made it illegal. This has been This Week in Radical History, and until next week, as always, I'm yours in a struggle, Mike Cannon.
Give these people a voting day every year so that they'll have the illusion of meaningless choice. Meaningless choice that we go like slaves and say, "Yo, I voted."